Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yuggera, Turrbal and Yugrupul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, the big eclipse, solar eclipse out there, sun and moon or something, total darkness in Cairns for a minute or two. That would have been strange, eh? 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, it's total darkness. How would it be some of our mob out in, just through Cape York? Might not be tuned into any media, mightn't be receiving anything. And then there's some strange stuff, business happening where there's something moving across the sun and next thing it's total darkness. You have to wonder what would be going on in people's minds if they didn't know that it was happening. And I'm sure that is the case. There are people around, not just our mob either. There'd be people around throughout Cape York that didn't know it was happening. Apparently the only place you could see this total eclipse or lunar eclipse, solar eclipse, was Cairns, Kakadu National Park and China. How's that? What an amazing event. 50,000 people in Cairns, visitors in Cairns, national and international visitors come in just for that event. Amazing. Today my guest is Darren Williams, the Director of Aboriginal Housing and Management Support Incorporated down in Canberra. Darren, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, Tiger. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for giving us your time. Tell us your mob, your country.
Well, I'm a Ngunnawal Ngambri man that come from the ACT area. My grandmother's stolen generation. She was taken away when she was five, and the family was basically raised up in Ningen, where she was billeted out. And we've had I basically lived an itinerant life until I moved back to country about 20 years ago.
All right. And the organisation, how long has that been established and what led to its establishment?
The organisation was established in 2009. It was basically come about because there was a request for the community to provide input into the Indigenous Economic Development Strategy, and also where I worked at the time, we were receiving a lot of people coming in from, and I was working in Queanbeyan, and we received a lot of people coming in from the ACT to try and find housing. Most of them were homeless, and we basically started the organisation because of that.
All right. There'd be other housing organisations around in your area?
Yeah, there's a couple. Billabong Housing was one of the major housing organisations in the ACT. They've recently handed back all their housing to ACT government because of a number of reasons, but one of them in particular is because of the legislation which basically provides the government with the grounds to take the whole organisation over if they deem it to be at risk. And there's no real definition of it at risk, so that basically they could come in and take it over any time they want, regardless of what the organisation is.
And what about First Nations housing organisations? I'm thinking that the organisation you've just referred to is a mainstream organisation, is it not?
No. Billabong's an Aboriginal housing organisation.
Oh, right. Okay.
There's another Aboriginal housing organisation called SHAC. Both organisations now are not funded by ACT government, and they're struggling to make ends meet. Our organisation's not funded at the moment. We basically, everything that we do at the moment is funded by the directors, and a couple of the directors are actually on pensions.
All right. Boy, gee, that's be a bit of a struggle there then, with the other two organisations not really running. The government would be handling their business now, you say?
No, The government's handling Billabong's.
Okay, the housing stock and tenants. Yeah.
But Billabong is still operating with some of its own housing. Shack has seven houses that it was originally allocated, but has no financial sort of backing or support from government.
Okay, be a bit of a struggle with that one. All right. Yeah. Now, what are some of the issues? Housing is an issue right across the country, not just ACT, as you've told me earlier. Housing for people, and not just First Nations people, homelessness is an issue right across the country, and supported housing or a proper housing is just, there's a big shortage of it.
Well, that's right. There's a number of groups that we look at. Men 18 and above, it's become worse and worse for that group, because basically they think that men can look after themselves, but you get into a domestic violence situation, they get ousted by the police. The only place that the police have got to take them is to the police station and lock them up. There's no alternative to that, to being locked up. Men that have been in a situation where they've gone and had a separation, no domestic violence involved, but they have nowhere to go. So they look for accommodation. They can't afford it because either they're not working or whatever. So they're out on the streets.
One of the other issues.
Men and above are a major problem.
Okay. Now, one of the other issues for First Nations people is that sort of extended family business, or the fact where we might be looking after other children other than our own, somebody else in the family. And I believe you've been looking after a member of your family and a young high school student as well.
Yeah,
so is that an issue for us as well, this other members of the family that we care for?
That's right. Well, I'm a carer for my cousin, has a number of illnesses, diabetes being the major one, but, thyroids, etc. So I look after her, and I've got a niece from another cousin that I've been raising, and I've got her through year 12 now, and she's now working full-time, which is a good thing. But it's a struggle because it actually took 3 years to get her through year 11 and 12.
Right.
But we're not the only family like that. All families, all of our mob are like that. We take in families. There was a lady that moved back to the ACT because her parents were living in the ACT after relocating for work. And she relocated back to her parents' place with her four children and basically put the house into an overcrowding situation. Now she's in emergency accommodation because they just couldn't stay where they were.
And even the emergency accommodation is pretty tight. You'd be very lucky to get emergency accommodation when you're homeless, when you're out and about looking for somewhere to stay.
Well, that's right. She was quite lucky that St. Vincent de Paul actually had one house that just became free. So she got put into that straight away. But, there's other people that are out there that are living on the street or, couch hopping, things like that, and they're not getting any assistance at all. They've got a thing here in the ACT called First Point, and that's the government's initiative to provide a referral service for people that are homeless or that are in need of accommodation. The problem with First Point is that, and I've experienced it firsthand, is that they've had men come in. Well, I've experienced it with the men, but they've had men come in looking for accommodation. They've provided the men with a sleeping bag, and then told to go and find a corner to camp in for the night.
Well, that's pretty rough, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a real worry when that happens, and that's why I'm really pushing to, well, I'm trying to push to see if we can do some more with housing. But unfortunately, it's like hitting your head up against a brick wall trying to talk to people in government. They have their own agendas, and they're not really prepared to take on new organisations. And the existing organisations, they're they don't even want to talk to.
Is there an issue where there appears to me the figures, that the stats are growing in numbers insofar as people identifying as First Nations people, with the numbers growing there? And there's some discussion and debates about, well, you know, are they First Nations people? Are they some certainly are a stolen generation mob that have just found out who they are and their heritage and bloodline and families and stuff like that. Some are still searching. But there's a growing number of our mob out there.
Yeah, there is, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are First Nation people. There's a lot of people out there that are members of Stolen Generation. Like I said, my grandmother was Stolen Generation, and I come back to country 20 years ago. But there is some unscrupulous people that are claiming to be First Generation that aren't.
Well, tick in the box. Are you Aboriginal or Islander? Tick the box. Yes, I am. And that's as far as they go, you think?
That's right, you know. And that's a real problem in itself, but I don't know how that's going to be addressed. There's individuals that can be identified that are not Aboriginal, but how do you challenge that sort of thing?
That's right. Yes, because there's, well, this identification system where people are expected to get a confirmation of Aboriginality, as the government departments put it, and almost everybody needs a confirmation of Aboriginality to go to a school. You know, if you're going to tick the box as being Aboriginal, you've got to have a confirmation of Aboriginality.
Well, that's right. But I actually applied for a loan through ATSIC years ago, and ATSIC turned around to me and said my Aboriginality was too old. You know, what do I do? Change the colour of my skin, you know, in a matter of 10 years.
Oh, the actual form was dated back too far. You had to get something more up to date.
Yeah. The Aboriginality that I had from the community that I lived in was too old, apparently.
Yes, yep. Now, well, it all depends on what particular bureaucrat you're dealing with, doesn't it? Sometimes a public servant.
And that's where all the problems stem from, is the public servants. They, they're the ones that write policies and procedures and things like that without consultation. They're the ones that make all the decisions, and we have no input into it.
All right. What do you think we do then, Darren, as a community, as First Nations people? What can we do? That's a problem you've identified. How do you see yourself? How do you organise to overcome it?
Well, I think that the first thing is that traditional owners are the ones that should be identifying people in those circumstances, but... you know, I think that as a community as a whole, we need to break the divide and conquer attitude of government. You know, I know in the ACT in itself, there's a number of factional groups, I guess you call it, that have been set up purely to split the community up. And what we need to do is we need to actually work together and help each other so that we can meet these problems and address them.
Yeah, well, there was that organisation and mobilisation of our mob back in the, well, back in the 30s and then the 60s and 70s and 80s saw our mob moving and mobilising and organising things. Do you think we've lost some of that? And why? Well, what's the situation?
I don't think the people are willing to stand up and talk. I think the problem is that... people are quite happy to sit back and let somebody else do it. So, you know, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to say, well, Tiger, you get out there and you start saying, we need to help each other. I'm not going to do it. I'll just sit back and wait until you start it. You know, that's the sort of attitude that the community has. They're not prepared to stand up and fight for what their rights are.
I suppose some may have quite valid situations where, you know, they might be hands full, single mum or single dad and kids to go to school. But you would expect more of our mob. I agree to you to some extent that there's our mob. It's a different time and different place these days. We're in a different space.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to organise our mob. But I think we still need to continue. Even here in Brisbane, we need to continue with the efforts of... giving people a reason to come together as a community.
And I understand that there was a tent embassy in Musgrave Park, and that was a start towards I suppose creating another identity, or an extension of the identity of the tent embassy here in the ACT. And I think that it was a good thing. Unfortunately, I believe that there was a fire at the tent embassy up there.
Yeah, there was, but it's been restored and stuff. But that 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games was here also recently, and saw a number of the older pioneers and older warriors come to town. And it was a tent embassy that virtually organised and facilitated that all at Musgrave Park, and that was a fantastic event.
Yep.
It was really good. And it did see a big gathering of our community mob come together. I think it was on the Friday evening. Come together at Musgrave Park. There was a big fire going, and there was big mob of dancers, about 40 traditional dancers from 2-year-old to 60-year-old or so dancing there, you know. So there was a bit of a community event. Then there was a smoking ceremony where a big mob of leaf was put on the fire, and people in a circle just went around and round and through the smoke and stuff. That sort of thing, a lot of people seem to feel good about that, and I think that we've got to try and maintain that, bring back that energy and that feeling and stuff.
Well, that's right. That's something that we're missing, is that the culture's not being handed down. It's being utilised by a few people, but not being handed down to the rest of the community. And if we have more events like that, then it can be passed on.
The cultural identity. You think that's important for our mob, our young ones growing up? For you as a younger Ngunnawal Ngambri man?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we need to know where we come from and who we are before we can actually stand up and start arguing with people or trying to get things done for our people. Without knowing who you are, it makes it pretty hard. Personally, I had it difficult growing up because I'm a fair skin. And growing up in Indigenous communities, it was, I'd suffered discrimination from both sides. But finding out where I originally come from was the best part of my life.
All right. Yeah, I can relate to that. I copped a bit from both sides. Wasn't allowed on the school bus because of whites only, and on my walk home I was fighting with black fellas that were still living on the riverbank.
Yep.
Still living in tents and stuff, you know, and... Yes, I was caught up in that, and that can be soul-destroying or identity, you know, the identity crisis you go through, and it takes a little while to work through it sometimes.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. But it certainly is good to know your mob and country and, you know, where the mob people come from, but your forefathers and stuff, because I think that's our biggest strength, is our culture, those cultural values, those traditions that we carry on today, the sharing, the caring, bringing our mob into the house when they need somewhere to camp and giving them a feed and taking care of our mob, you know.
Yeah, and that's the strong part about our community. We do care about extended families, and we do bring everybody in regardless of how we stand in our own personal life. we do bring people in and look after them and whatever at our own cost.
Yes, that's right. Look, let's take a break for a song and come back. I want to talk to you maybe about some of the challenges for some of the young mob.
Yep.
You were saying the housing is homeless people over 20 is very difficult to try to resolve and to house people. But the challenges generally for some of our young ones who might be school leavers onwards. What are they doing in your area? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities in your area? If you can tell us a bit about that sort of business, would be good. Darren, what are some of the issues and challenges for younger First Nations people, particularly, I suppose, in your area? The education level, the school attendance, leaving school a bit early, trying to find a job. What's the situation?
Yeah, from an education point of view, I guess it's really difficult to try and keep the kids moving through to year 12. programs in place to try and keep them going across to, you know, from transition from year six to year seven. And in the ACT, we have a college system. So from year 10, they move over to college in year 11 and 12. And there's a lot of emphasis on trying to keep them transitioning over to the next school levels. But they have difficulties in trying to keep attendances and stuff like that, because funding's, you know, in every, you know, I think the problem in everything is funding. It's really difficult to try and get that balance, I guess, in what's needed. But the staff that are currently working for the kids in the education system are way underfunded. And from a meeting that I had with the Indigenous elected body a couple of weeks ago, there was representatives from ACT education, well, staff working in the ACT education, that were providing the support base for the kids. And the problem they had was that one person would be working something like about 10 or 15 schools to try and look after those kids. And even though Canberra's a small area, it has a fairly wide range of schools. There's one public school, I think, in nearly every suburb of the ACT. And these guys are doing a great job to try and keep the kids there, but, you know, they lose a few kids every year, you know, causing them to drop out. And it's only to dedication like them and other people. There's a particular teacher at one of the colleges here that really dedicates herself to trying to keep the kids at school, but, you know, funding is a major issue. And kids look at that, and without the support, they're all looking for the support base, but when it's not there, they just drop off.
What about some of the issues around relevance of information in classrooms, or relevance of what's being taught, to relevant to the kids for when they leave, or to try and have them job ready, or whatever it might be, like to be inclined to be skilled enough, I suppose, to be able to go and look for a job. When you look at it, so it's coming from a colonial perspective. The education system is a foreign system, and we're trying to fit into it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, our people are traditionally hands-on anyway. I'm a hands-on person, and I always have been. I think that the education department here is trying to address that problem, from what I understand. They're trying to put in programs in place where the kids actually go out and physically do work out on site or in their chosen field, or they get a choice of some of the studies. It hasn't been fully implemented from what I understand, but if we go to a national education system, half of the stuff that's been put out to the ACT kids is going to be wiped out, and we're going to be back to square one again. The kids get an opportunity to go out to places like Tibimbilla and talk to the cultural workers out there, who give them a demonstration of the sites and things like that. So they do have a limited opportunity in the ACT, but I'm not entirely sure as to what extent.
Mm. What about support network support services for young people that there's First Nations mob and there's mainstream mob that are unable to find work for some reason or other, unable to go to school or have completed school? What's around for them to do?
Well, there's an organisation in the ACT called Googan-Gulwin. It's an Indigenous youth centre. And they provide great support to the kids of the ACT. The problem is that Googan, while it's a great service, and they're looking after the kids, they're basically looking after Southside. Basically, Canberra's split into three areas, and you've got Northside, Southside, and then the inner city. And the Northside and inner city kids aren't getting access to the service as much as the Southside kids are, so they're missing out.
Why is that? Why aren't they getting access so much? What's the issue there?
Well, there hasn't been any expansion of the Googan Googan organisation or anybody considering, I guess, setting up a service on the north side. I think that if they could duplicate the Googan service on the north side, then our kids would be good in getting a good good assistance for education. And Googan also builds up their self-esteem and helps them work towards thinking about careers and stuff like that.
All right. Do you think, how do you feel when you see, I don't know, lots of money going into Central Australia, Northern Australia, tens of millions of dollars on particular programs, because I think the government seems to think that, well, and I think it's right that there's very few services and they need some support. But I think it's done at the expense or not recognising that people, be they inner city, north side, south side, Canberra, or Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, doesn't matter. There are First Nations situations that suffer in a similar way, that need to be recognised and developed or resolve some of these issues. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's the case, or what are your thoughts here?
I think that the government work on the whims of what international politics says. The bottom line, I guess, is that 90% of funding goes to 10% of our people, and the 10% of the funding that goes to 90% of the people, which are in urban and semi-urban areas. It's an unequitable situation, but the government are working on the basis that they're getting pressure from international to look after remote people, which is rightly so. They should be looking after remote because it's a difficult area, but they don't have a proper balance. And then the problem we have is that then we've got to try and work on the limited amount of funds that we do for a large amount of people. And it's the same in Brisbane. It'll be the same in Sydney as it is in Canberra. We have a small amount of funds that we've got to try and do a hell of a lot with. Look, the money, I don't begrudge anybody getting money that can get assistance where it's needed. I just think that they need to work out the balances better and not work on international complaints, because the international people have no idea what urban people suffer.
Yes, no, it's certainly got to be some balance there, but it's difficult. It ain't easy. Look, is there anything else you want to add in winding up?
No, I just wanted to let you know that we're also you're aware of Indigimail.
Indigimail, yeah. Tell us about Indigimail.
Indigimail is the it's the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander in email network that Ricky Pascoe was working with for a fair while, and I took on the distribution of the email network and helped Ricky register the organisation through Warwick, and now we're a registered organisation, and it's called Indigimail Australia Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Organisation.
All right.
And basically what we do is it's a sharing information network. A lot of things that come through our network are jobs, sorry business is a important part of the network, because there's people that have come back to me and said that if it wasn't for Indigimail, we wouldn't have known about passing of a family member. A lot of people have actually got jobs from the emails that are going through the network. There's information sharing about events. I've learned a hell of a lot about Brisbane from the network, you know, hence the knowledge about Musgrave Park and the Ten Embassy.
How do people engage or be a part of Indigimail? What do they need to do?
All they need to do is send me an email at darren@indigenoussupport.org.au and ask to be put onto the network, and I'll include them into the distribution list, and they'll start receiving emails straight away.
So Darren with two R's?
That's right. So Darren.
At?
At Indigenous Support, double S in the middle there,
All one word?
Yep. .org.au.
All right. So anyone can email you and say they'd like to be put on that list, and they can contribute and receive. Like they can contribute. They can put information in that, and they can they're on the mail out list. They can be reading what's going around as well.
Yeah, yeah. We'd like a lot more information to come from other states as well. We get a lot of the information from Queensland, a bit of New South Wales, ACT and South Australia, but we get very little information coming from Western Australia, Northern Territory, Tasmania and Victoria. So we'd like more information from those areas. Mm. It's a really good network to find out what's happening in other areas and share your information, share your good news. Let us know what's happening in your area. You know, have there been positive outcomes? Have you received money from somewhere that somebody else might get benefit from it? Things like that.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, there you go. People can contact Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, Darren at indigenoussupport.org.au and be a part of IndigiMail. Darren, thanks for joining us today. It's good to hear some of the issues and certainly your challenges and struggles down there in ACT. Thanks for telling us.
Thanks, Tiger. Thanks for your time.
You have a good day, man.
You too, bro.
Bye now. Darren Williams joining us there. We've got a song by Sue Ray, First Nations woman, called Last Cigarette. And this probably be good for somebody else to make... To make that decision that this next, or that last one will be my last. I'm making some changes, going to try and get healthy. Particularly in the First Nations community, it's the stats say that 1 out of 2 adult First Nations people are smokers. Pretty serious statistics, and has a serious impact on health. And you know, I think it's great that governments. And now, I mean, there's that plain packaging cigarettes now with just the brand name, whether it's a Winfield or something else, in small letters written on the packet. That has started, that has begun in the shops. There's the brand names are largely removed. Plain paper packaging, maybe it's called, I don't know. In regards to cigarette smoking, that habit, that filthy habit, and sugar. You see the amount of information coming in from government sources and from the establishment about sugar. We've got to keep kids away from sugar, keep our people away from sugar. I wonder, is there still government support and funding for sugarcane growers to try and help those poor fellas out? Help them out by not allowing any more sugar to be grown. And help them get into another industry somewhere, do something else but sugar, and not tobacco. So stop growing tobacco, stop growing sugar, and we might be on the way to turning some health issues around in this country. 3892-0188, if you'd like to make a call or a comment. What are your thoughts on sugar, sugary drinks, sugar in everything, and the obesity situation, the problem? I think it was yesterday's Courier Mail. The front page headlines was about sugar. It is certainly a filthy habit or a filthy rotten drug almost, sugar, to get hooked on that. And it doesn't do one thing. Refined sugar does not have 1 ounce or a skerrick of nutritional benefit, not one, for the human body. And yet it's in everything, refined sugar, refined salt. Pretty serious effects and the impact of refined foods. And it's starting to hit the faces of the authorities, I suppose. The overweight issues, something I struggle with, a lot of people struggle with. But, there's some real issues out there, some real problems. Tomorrow's Let's Talk is going to be broadcast from the Murray School. The OB van will be present. It's the Murray School Careers Day. And we're We've got some guests talking. There's some health. Health is a topic. And it'll be done from the Murray School tomorrow. Our outside broadcast. Make sure you stay tuned. Yes, and Courier Mail today shows Campbell Newman, Premier of Queensland, has a few little grass fires going on in within his party. Now, old Brucey boy Fleggs are embroiled in accusations made by his former media advisor that's been sacked. You've got Ros Bates and her son, that business still going on. You've got old Clive Palmer's sticking it to him. And Newman doesn't look like he's running the ship any different to any other government that's been in power. Look after the mates. That's how it appears, how it reads. It's time for me to go. You join us tomorrow for our broadcast out of the Murray School. And tune in to Let's Talk on your local First Nations station. You have a great day.